Alrighty, well, hey there, people. John here with Crypto Top 10, coming at you to talk about some of the more trending articles in the crypto news space for November 16th of 2020. Ah, boy, we are getting close to the end of the year. Thank goodness. Hopefully next year is a bit better for all of us. But as always, straight off the top, thank you to everyone who has subscribed wherever you're finding this content. I really do appreciate it. It helps me out immensely, letting me know that I am doing correctly all the things. And on top of that, there are links down in the description or a link to the YouTube video with the links in the description that you can follow to check out all the articles talked about, depending on where you're finding this content, be it on a podcast form or the YouTube video form. But let's get in and talk about the trending news for the day. I did want to touch on Zilliqa. We haven't talked about Zilliqa in a while, but you guys like it when I talk about it. So let's talk about Zilliqa and the recently announced development of the Zero Protocol. So as Zilliqa is looking forward to launch a new DeFi ecosystem, that's right, they're hopping in the game just like everyone else, the Zero Protocol will be at the center of it. With ZSwap as its decentralized exchange, Zero will also function as the native token. So Zilliqa will ensure that ZSwap is provided with traffic and a strong community foundation. Basically, they're going to be using the popular dApp Zilliqa Planet. It'll help ZSwap with some seed users. It's got about 40,000 active users monthly, and it could help increase the token conversion rate. So basically what they're going to be doing is Zilliqa Planet is going to be renamed to the Zero Wallet. So currently Zilliqa Planet, obviously, it functions in a type of wallet form, but they're going to bundle everything up and make the branding line up. Personally, I think Zero Wallet sounds a heck of a lot better than Zilliqa Planet, just me personally. It'll be the local wallet that will help with governance, supervision, and asset management functions for users. In their Zero Wallet, users will be able to manage and hold all Zilliqa assets and ZRC2 tokens. So pretty similar to pretty much any other DeFi type program that you'll see on Ethereum or Tron, or God, what other coins out there have DeFi? It's not many right now. Rather than just volume, the liquidity function that Zero Protocol will be using covers certain things like trading price and the transaction pace, so the actual amount of transactions and the speed they're going. When the price of the transaction is close to fair market, the liquidity will increase while the transaction slippage will reduce. Also, when the transaction's pace is higher, the market liquidity will also be better. Not too bad. On top of that, Zero, you'll be able to mine it a couple different ways. Liquid mining, trading mining, and node mining. So this kind of makes Zero stand out against some Ethereum-based DeFi protocols, as you'll be able to have a few more options in the way that you want to go about getting it. Not too bad, honestly. I'm pretty excited for Zilliqa and the Zero Wallet. It's a popular currency in the sense that it's got quite the cult following, I've found over my time covering it. It's doing okay so far. I believe it's currently trading around 1 to 2 cents, depending on when you see this. It's a good little protocol. Check it out. And I'm glad that they're doing the name change. I think Zilliqa Planet is kind of early aught in its terminology. I like the Zero Wallet. But let's hop on over. Yearn Finance is doing something pretty big. It doesn't seem like it. It seems boring as hell, but it actually is going to be really good for the long-term development of the project. So I wanted to highlight it here. After a 3-day voting period, this morning, members of Yearn Finance's decentralized governance approved Yearn's Improvement Plan, or YIP, YIP 54, which will formalize an ongoing budget for operational expenses. Yawn, right? Well, again, long-term success comes from organizations that have good plans, and I love the plan behind this. YIP 54 is going to improve on all the previous protocols, including YIP 36 and YIP 41. Those proposals allowed for, you know, expenditures relating to hackathons, grants, security audits, bug bounties, and operational employee salaries. I mean, yeah. Those people are employed by the network itself, so that's pretty interesting. Under YIP 54, community members will be able to audit expenses quarterly. So, yeah, pretty good. I mean, I really love that addition that you, a community member, can go in and audit the protocol. I don't know what the average person will find, but it's nice that the option exists. YIP 54 includes a provision allowing for the newly formed operations fund to, quote, buy back Wi-Fi and other assets at its discretion. So let's say they manage to run all this and they come in under budget. Let's say they've got extra $18,000, $19,000, $20,000 sitting around. Rather than let it go to waste, they can buy back some Wi-Fi and put it in the development fund or wherever they want to move it, thereby taking coin off the market. So pretty darn nice. YIP 53, so the most recent proposal before this, established the Y Academy, which is a security audit focused program that is designed with the purpose of attracting and retaining top talent. The idea is to help establish profit generating audits and auditing a profit generating auditing service in the future. Mind my mushmouth, dear Lord, that's a pretty nice idea. So you build this academy, you create this base of users that can really audit your own code strongly, make you really secure, and then you can turn around and offer that service to other coins and earn money on it, thereby paying for yourself and helping with the operating costs. Pretty darn nice. Like, that is some long-term thinking. And the one before that, YIP 52, actually significantly increased rewards for strategists or the smart contract engineers who develop yield-bearing strategies for Yearn vaults, which is where a good chunk of their money long-term is probably going to be coming, so it makes sense that they want to invest heavily in that area. And what better way to attract top talent than by paying them really, really well? Wi-Fi, you know, it had dipped all the way down to like $7,700. It's back near like $20,000. It's doing pretty good, and these YIP or Yearn Improvement Protocols that they vote on, they might seem boring, and I've said this already, but the fact that they are doing these and the fact that they seem to be not just like, oh, we're throwing, you know, this idea out here, we're doing this thing. You know, they're making sure people are paid really well. They're making sure they have strong security and audits. They're making sure that community members can audit expenses quarterly. You know, the average person who holds Wi-Fi might not be able to do much with that. But there are some users out there who probably have participated in hackathons, maybe even gotten a bug bounty or two in the past. They can participate and audit, potentially find even more mistakes, as well as having a formalized operating budget. Wi-Fi is in a good position. I really, really like it. But let's hop on over, talk about Bitcoin Cash and their hard fork. It went live yesterday, November the 15th. There's currently a pretty clear winner in the dispute. We all assumed who it would be, but it was between the developer team of Bitcoin Cash ABC and the Bitcoin Cash Node group, and Bitcoin Cash Node won. In fact, all 73 blocks that were mined after the hard fork through a mining pool used the BCHN software, and BCHABC got bupkis. A look at the hash rate of both competing parties show that BCHN has won over a vast majority of the miners, which also makes sense. Prior to the hard fork, 80% of the miners signaled that they would support BCHN. If you assume that 10% weren't paying close enough attention to notice that this was going on, that means only 10% were supporting Bitcoin ABC. So it's pretty obvious at this point BCHN will get the BCH ticker symbol and be considered the quote-unquote original Bitcoin Cash. Moreover, most major crypto exchanges have announced in advance they would support BCHN. In the case of Coinbase, they announced that they would support BCHN and BCHN only, stating, please be aware, we will not support the BCHABC forked coin. So if you have Bitcoin Cash sitting on your Coinbase account right now that was sitting through November 15th, you're not going to get any BCHABC coin. That stinks. I'm sorry if you are one of those people. If you were able to move it off and you get a bit of both, I'd probably sell that BCHABC for whatever you can get it for. Binance, however, did not exclude the possibility that there would be two coins after the fork, which the exchange would also distribute. So it looks like they will have both, at least for a little while. I doubt Bitcoin Cash ABC will last very long, in my opinion. And then for those of you who don't know, this whole thing came about because the guy behind Bitcoin ABC, Amaury Sachet, wanted a Coinbase rule, quote-unquote, which Coinbase absolutely hated. It provides that 8% of the mined BCH be directed to Bitcoin ABC to finance the development of the protocol, which most users considered, and in my opinion rightfully so, kind of scammy and really centralized. But hey, is what it is. He didn't succeed, and Bitcoin Cash can go on doing whatever Bitcoin Cash has been doing. I don't know what that is. Not much. All right. Sorry. I'm not a big fan of Bitcoin Cash. Anyway, let's hop on over. I'll take a look at Value DeFi and the recent hack or exploit, depending on how you term these things. This guy, he siphoned off about $6 million from Value DeFi, but it looks like he's got at least a bit of a heart because he's sent back about $95,000 in the forgotten fund, in the stolen funds. So the hacker who recently did this, he read some messages left for him in Ethereum transactions. So using the private note function, one of the allegedly affected users claimed to be a nurse who lost $100K in the DeFi hack. Quote, I lost $100,000 in your attack. I'm a nurse. These are all my savings. I hope you can return it to me. Everyone will get sick. And then God bless you, as well as some other things. He did reply. He noted that there are so many people who lack knowledge and caution, and sooner or later those people's money will be lost. Though he did actually send back about $50,000 to the affected nurse. They also then transferred about 45,000 DAI to a user claiming to be a student who lost $200,000 of his family's life savings in the hope of getting a high yield return. Why you would risk everything on one thing, I don't understand. Diversify, spread your things out. $200,000 of family life savings? Why was that in cash? Why was that not partially in the stock market, partially in bonds, partially in crypto? I'm sorry, I'm ranting and raving here. Value DeFi then also reached out to the hacker after these two things, offering him $1 million as a bug bounty and asking him to return the rest. They, quote, said, how about 1 million DAI as a bounty and you return the DAI back to our affected users? We have a plan to make whole all those affected in our community, and this would definitely accelerate the process. So far, the hacker has chosen to keep nearly $5 million as opposing to trade it for just one. Now, this is something I've kind of been thinking about, and let me know what you think about it down in the comments. Would you rather have $5 million technically gotten illegally, technically? There's some argument back and forth whether or not that he could be pursued and criminally prosecuted because while he did use the program for it not its intended use, it was a bug in the system that caused it. So technically the fault lies on DeFi or Value DeFi. I don't know. Me personally, I would take the $1 million as a bug bounty because then you don't have to look with your, you don't have to look over your shoulder for a long period of time. You can get $1 million scot-free. You get to return $5 million. So all these people get their money back. You get that, and then you can use a $1 million bug bounty winner as quite a good pickup line in the bar if you go to a bar where ladies are into that sort of thing. Or you can use it to build a portfolio and possibly become, you know, turn this into like a legitimate career. So, I don't know. Let me know what you think. Me personally, I dislike looking over my shoulder, so I would, I'd give it back. I would. Also, I have a heart, so I probably wouldn't have stolen $6 million in the first place. So, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Let's hop on over. Last two articles are going to talk about Bitcoin. So Fidelity actually is trying to rebut some of the arguments that Bitcoin is a failed means of payment. I kind of like their argument as well. So they argue that this criticism fails to understand one of Bitcoin's core purposes. The currency is outperformed, Fidelity accepts, by conventional payment rails like Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, which can offer a higher throughput. However, Bitcoin has been designed with other priorities in mind, including perfect scarcity. While the coin is, in theory, viable as a payment tool, its limitations mean that everyday use is not necessarily the end goal for the asset. And users should be aware that the coin's design has prioritized aspects such as decentralization, finance supply, and immutable settlement. I wholeheartedly agree with this. Bitcoin is a dinosaur in terms of speed. It's slow, it's lumbering, and it's a bit of a behemoth. That's a dinosaur. It's not designed to be that fast. It's not designed to compete with Visa, MasterCard, and PayPal. It's designed to be decentralized, it's designed to be anti-inflationary, and it's designed to be completely secure. It really succeeds at those three marks. And what the trade-off is, it's slow. Do you want something that is fast, quick, easy, and can be hacked, or do you want something that is slow, but will go up in value over time, cannot be disputed, and is almost impossible to hack? They prioritized the way they were going to prioritize. And Satoshi, I think his stroke of brilliance was identifying that decentralization, finite supply, and immutable settlement would be key in creating what we've got today. Now, did he know Bitcoin was going to become what it has become today? I highly doubt it. It was probably more of an experiment for him that went way off the rails. But yeah, that's kind of okay. It's changed the world. I hope he's still out there and alive, or the team, if Satoshi Nakamoto was a team, was out there and still all, the majority of them are out there, rich, still alive, can look back on their time creating a movement with a smile on their face. Except Craig Wright. Screw that guy. Anyways, related to payments, Fidelity tackles the criticism that Bitcoin's extreme volatility compromises its use as a store of value. Fidelity again reframes the terms of the criticism, claiming that volatility is the price paid for an intervention-resistant market. I mean, I wouldn't mind if Bitcoin got really volatile and there was a flash crash back to $10,000 so I could buy more of it, because I thoroughly believe, as we'll talk about in the next article, that we're looking at a pretty insane spike in price over the next year. And let's hop on over there. Fidelity's got a pretty long article on this. Cointelegraph kind of summarized it up, but it is pretty nice. But there was an article, a little newsletter that was leaked for some of the top investors with Citibank, where Thomas Fitzpatrick, who is a managing director at the aforementioned bank, predicted Bitcoin could skyrocket to $318,000 per coin over the next year by exploring several historical price cycles and the ongoing economic uncertainties. Yeah, I will just let that over $250,000, a third of $1 million for one. Fitzpatrick touched upon Bitcoin's massive volatility and remarkable price developments during the last decade. He highlighted the two most significant market booms. Their two-year-long rally from 2011 to 2013, where the price multiplied by 550 times, and the latest major bull run that culminated in 2017's all-time high of 20,000. Fitzpatrick believes that Bitcoin is actually in a bull market now that started in December of 2018 and could lead to groundbreaking price territories. I would agree with him on that. Bitcoin has been kind of on an upward trajectory since that time. The only major crash that really, really comes to mind is the coronavirus crash, which was a once-in-a-lifetime type of thing. He noted that every new cycle is longer than the previous one, and the current one could end in December of 2021. This time horizon allows Bitcoin to explode in value and move as high as $318,000. With Bitcoin's price currently sitting at 16K thereabouts, a 1,900% price surge. Sounds a little far-fetched, However, it is worth noting that Fitzpatrick's model is not the only one that sees Bitcoin reaching similar territory. The creator of the famous stock-to-flow model foresees a $288,000 coin by December of 2021, which, again, absolute freaking insanity to think if you hold one Bitcoin by these models, you could buy a nice house in the Midwest. In the Midwest is the key word there. A nice house in the Midwest in cash by this time next year. Think about that. 1 year from now, if you have one Bitcoin, you could buy, I live in the Midwest, you can get a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom, a little small on the square footage size, let's say 1,400 to 1,600 square feet, for between $150,000 and $225,000, depending on the school district and proximity to major highways. Be really nice. Be really, really nice. That could really change a lot of people's lives. So yeah, I will be watching these things with great interest, and it's amazing to see that a huge, 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 huge bank like Citibank is stating these things, and that more and more people are starting to echo these sentiments. But that will do it for the trending articles in the crypto news space. As always, my name is John with Crypto Top 10. It's been great talking to you all. Let's take a look at the top 10 coins by market cap really quick. Bitcoin, $16,424.34, up 2.24% on the day. Nice. It's actually a pretty green day. Litecoin just hit $70.58. It's up 12.28% on the day. Awesome for Litecoin. They are the one in the top 10 that is up the most. Cardano just snagged back a spot in the top 10. Kicking Bitcoin SV down once again, if I'm remembering that correctly. Not too bad. Everything in the top 10 is green in some way, shape, or form, with the exception of Tether, but none of us care about that. Augur. I have not talked about Augur in a long time. It's up 20% on the day, but they had quite the dip a couple days ago, so that's kind of just them returning to normal. SushiSwap's also up 20% on the day and 130% on the week, so I hope those of you out there holding SushiSwap bought low. And biggest loser, Midas Touch Gold, which routinely seems to be either the biggest gainer or the biggest loser, is today the biggest loser, down almost 12%. Uniswap's down almost 10%. Not too bad. It's still up almost 40% on the week, so, you know, you win some, you lose some. But that will do it. If you've made it to this point in the episode and you haven't subscribed, hit that freaking button. Like, seriously, you can stay up to date on all the things we are doing here with Crypto Top 10. Do it. Check out the description, follow those links, do your own research. An educated crypto user is gonna make more money than some dude who just blindly buys and sells in the market. Peace out, Girl Scouts.